Hi, we're Grace and Clara, here to shake up the world of women's health.
We know firsthand how intimidating it can be to speak up when it comes to issues like your menstrual cycle or menopause.
That's why we create Unprocessed, a weekly podcast where we dive into every aspect of women's health, from mental well-being to physical nutrition.
We're here to ask the burning questions and encourage us all to advocate for ourselves.
So get ready for some smart, cheeky and witty discussions about all things women's health. Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. I hope you're having a beautiful week so far. Today we are joined by Samantha Payne, the co-founder and CEO of Pink Elephant Support Network. Pink Elephants provide the latest resources, information and peer support for anyone impacted by early pregnancy loss. It is through her own experience with pregnancy loss that Sam found motivation to create this organization. Her mission is to ensure no one faces the journey of early pregnancy loss alone, and that every bereaved parent receives the support, empathy, and understanding they deserve. I will pop a trigger warning on this episode as we do discuss mental health, suicide, and pregnancy loss. If you or someone you know needs help, please contact Lifeline on 131114 or Beyond Blue on 130022 4636 or reach out to peer support on the Pink Elephant website. I'll pop links in the show notes below. Well, Sam, thank you for joining us on the podcast today. It's such a pleasure to have you. I was wondering if you could share with us your personal journey that led you to co-found Pink Elephant.
Sure. I'm really grateful to be here and kind of spread the word around miscarriage support because it's still such a taboo topic. But yeah, my journey feels so long ago now because I've been in this space for 8 years. I founded Pink Elephants after my second miscarriage. I had a child already, and therefore I was met with a lot of, at least you already have Georgie, at least you've got a baby, focus on her. And yet no one was acknowledging the babies that I'd lost, and I'd lost two within 6 months, and I was broken. I remember vividly not being able to sleep at night, having nightmares. I remember feeling anxiety throughout the whole day and really struggling just to carry on and to even look after Georgie. And yet no one seemed to acknowledge it. Everyone just wanted to minimize this experience for me, or they just didn't want to talk about it at all. And I found that really, really hard. I am someone that shares, and I am someone that seeks support through connection, and there just wasn't anything for early pregnancy loss. And I guess it was after that second loss, a few weeks after it, I just got really angry. And that anger is obviously where Pink Elephants came from, because I thought, if one in four pregnancies end in loss, if this many of us are suffering in silence, then why isn't there something? Why is there no support? Why is no one talking about this experience that has literally rocked me to my core like nothing else has before? And yeah, that was where Pink Elephants came from.
And what was your first move that made you establish this charity?
Yeah, great question. So I knew that I had my experience, but I knew that everyone's experiences were different, that they weren't all the same, that we were all having this label of miscarriage. But when you actually did speak to people who'd had a loss, it may have been an ectopic pregnancy, or it may have been a loss after years of IVF, or it may have been a loss before they even had any children. So I knew there was differences, and I wanted to understand those differences better. I didn't want to create support for me either. I wanted to create support for others going through this. And so we held focus groups. And I remember they were in Coogee, in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, and we just invited a few women that we knew who'd had loss. And we spent the most magical evening, heartbreaking, yes, because we were sharing such sorrow. But it was the first time you kind of really went, this has legs. This will work. This is what women want. They want to be brought together. They want to share these experiences. They want to talk about them. They want to feel less alone. They want to feel validated in their grief. And that was happening right in front of our very eyes. Despite the difference experience, we knew that people felt connected. And so we had those focus groups. And then I was adamant that Pink Elephants needed to be a charity. I was at that time where I was trying to conceive again, and I was having to pay for acupuncture, I was paying for supplements, I was paying for doctor's appointments, I was constantly giving over money to people who promised me it would help end with a baby. And I just didn't want Pink Elephants to be that. I really feel like women deserve access to support for free. I don't feel like there should be a cost to it. And so we went through the whole process of charity registration, which took a whole year, required us to bootstrap fund this ourselves. So Gabby and I, the co-founder, we put our own money into this to start the charity because we just genuinely believed in the need. And Yeah, I think 8 years later, we can safely say there was a need and we've made a huge impact now. But yeah, we definitely started by listening to stories, meeting other people who'd had loss and giving them the safe spaces. And from that came the content that we created on our website that we allowed, that we wanted to, with content, we wanted to give people something that they read and it felt like it was a warm hug. It felt like it was someone who just got it rather than what you got from a hospital was a, I got anyway, was a black and white printed photocopied 1,000 times over so you could barely read it. Glossary of terms of things like ERPC, evacuation of remaining products of conception, medical miscarriage management, 3 options. It was really awful. And that was it. That was what I left hospital with. And I was like, no one's asking me how I am. No one's asking for support, right? Feelings. So, yeah, we wanted to be the opposite of that. And we wanted to create that. What we now know is obviously peer support and emotional support for people who are going through loss. But, yeah, that's where we started 8 years ago.
Was that hard creating this organization while you're still trying to have a baby?
It was really difficult. And I think I'm so far from my last loss now. My last loss was 4 years ago. The benefit of hindsight, right, that we all have and wisdom that comes with perspective of doing things for years. But I feel so much sorrow and so much tenderness for who I was 8 years ago, trying to help others, but also really trying to have my own losses acknowledged. Mm. And I don't think I realized I was doing that at the time. I now know I was what's called transitional grieving. I felt the need to do something to kind of get through it and to go forward through it. I couldn't stick in it. But I also know that I avoided my grief during a fourth pregnancy with Johnny, who's now he's now 7 now, incredible. I was setting pink elephants up. That pregnancy and writing content around miscarriage together was really not very wise, and I didn't look after myself. We also suffered significant other losses during that. We lost our nephew. We lost my father-in-law. It was just a really horrendous time where it felt like you were surrounded by grief. And when we had Johnny, I was an absolute mess, understandably. But I don't remember the first 4 months of Johnny's life, which is really cruel because you've worked so hard to have this baby. But then all of this pent-up grief that hadn't been dealt with, all of this emotions that I had no support with really because I was so busy trying to help others that I didn't deal with my own. And then that crashed and burned and I ended up with postpartum anxiety and I needed significant support. So, yes, it was incredibly hard. And then I did go on in July 2020 and I suffered another miscarriage. And by that point, Pink Elephants was 4 years in. We had significant reach. We were supporting thousands by that point. And I kind of had my name was associated with this. And it just felt so cruel that I could still have another miscarriage despite you'd done so. For so many others. And I also was so public. I felt like everyone was looking at me and it was just all far too much. And again, so much compassion now for who I was then. But somehow this still needed to be done as it does today. There's still so much work to do. And so yeah. I carried on. But yes, that's probably been a really hard balance. I'm now at a different point. I now have the children that I will forever have. We're no longer trying to build our family. And I don't have that kind of, it doesn't impact me in the same way. There's not, that risk isn't there anymore for me. But now it's a legacy to the babies that I lost. And I think it always was. I just didn't realize it. So now for the 3 babies that I can't parent today, those 3 children still matter to me. And so Pink Elephants is a legacy to them. And also then the future of the children I do get a parent. If they in the future do have losses, I will be damned if it's still the same today, if they are still met with deafening silence, if there's still taboo and stigma around this, if they're still not given access to support that validates a loss as a loss of a baby and they aren't minimized. And so that also drives me now to keep going and to do the work that we do.
Definitely. So I want to ask, as you said, when women deal with miscarriages, they get this deafening silence. They don't get the support. But you also mentioned something when we first started, because you already had one baby and they said, well, at least you've got one, which seems like not the right thing to say. So what are misconceptions around miscarriage, pregnancy, loss, and how can us as loved ones, what can we say and do to support you through it?
Before I get to misconceptions, I'm going to do the other way around first, but there's 3 key points that if you can remember, if you know someone going through loss, you can make a huge difference. And that's validation, empathy, and connection. Validate their experience as the loss of a baby. I'm sorry your baby died. I'm sorry you're here. I'm here for you. Empathy, meet them where they are, listen to their experience. Don't try and fix us. We don't need to know about your aunt's aunt who had acupuncture and all of a sudden has five children. At that point, we really just want the space and the time to grieve the baby that we've lost and an acknowledgement that it was a baby that we've lost. We're not yet thinking forward. Connection, send them to Pink Elephants. Make sure that they've got access to support from people who've been there before. Because whilst you are trying your absolute best, there is something so magical about connecting with another woman who's been through loss. It makes such a difference. It's just like a sense of relief. And so validation, empathy, and connection are the biggest things that I can say. Then the misperceptions around early pregnancy loss are that you get over it really quickly. And for some people, that might be the case. But for the majority that we support, it absolutely is not. And we have this really arbitrary timeline with grief where we compare the worthiness of the grief experience based on the gestation that the mother carried that baby for. And it's absolutely ridiculous. So therefore, if you lost a baby at 5 weeks, you should really be better to be totally fine within a few days, or a week at best is what we'll get access to grief for. And it's not that. What we hear time and time again for the women that we support is that it will be things like the due date when that comes around. There'll be unexpected bereavement that can come back up around then. It will be milestones years down the line when you should have a child starting kindergarten and you don't because you lost that baby. So yeah. People are forgetting that the hopes and the dreams that we imagine for these babies that we carried stay with us forever. And therefore, this is not a flash in the pan. It's not something that most people just move on with quickly. But when we do provide them empathy, validation, and connection, we can hold space for that grief. We can ensure they feel seen and supported in their experience. And we can help to give them the courage to potentially, if they want to, try again, potentially go through pregnancy after loss, which is also incredibly anxiety ridden. But you can just be there for them. You can make a difference by being present and acknowledging. And so, again, it's the opposite of the misperception that we have a miscarriage and because it happened early, or at least you know you now can get pregnant, and all of those at least disenfranchising statements can be completely removed from vernacular, and we meet them with validation instead. And all of a sudden, you're giving them permission to grieve. You're saying it's okay to grieve the loss of your baby, and I'm here with you. I'll grieve with you. And we'll get through this together. And there's a sense of connectedness there that is the antidote to isolation, which will then make sure they don't suffer alone in silence, because there's nothing worse than that.
Hey guys, it's Grace here. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. I want to interrupt our chat and share something really exciting with you all. We've taken your feedback into consideration over the last 12 months and used it to build a new app with one goal in mind: to help you feel good. We're proud to say that our app extends beyond delicious recipes and will be supporting you 24/7 to help nourish your mind and body. In this app, you'll have access to our complete recipe library with over 2,500 recipes, experts to help you improve your sleep, sustainable tutorials to keep your produce fresher for longer, and movement classes that will make you feel so good. We have popped a special offer in the show notes below. Now let's get back into the episode. So I watched the Mum documentary recently on Netflix, and for all our listeners, I totally encourage them to go watch this documentary. It's beautiful. And one thing that popped up was Tina couldn't feel happy about her pregnancy towards the end because she had experienced so much loss. And I was wondering, do you find this a common thing for women to experience?
Yeah, absolutely. There is not enough discussion around pregnancy after loss. Huge area that we're looking to expand and do more in. We offer support during that now, but there's so much more social awareness that needs to happen. So it's a great question. I can speak from the women that we support. We see so much anxiety. Every time you go to the toilet, checking to see if you're bleeding. Every time you feel something that's slightly different, imagining what that means, your baby's dying. And people, again, have this arbitrary marker that, okay, well, we've got past the miscarriage point now. We can be really happy and you can be really happy. And I remember myself having to pretend I was happy and put joy on a pregnancy when I wasn't. I was riddled with anxiety. I just needed this pregnancy to end. I needed the baby in my arms. And I thought then everything would all be okay. But there was no acceptance that we can experience two things at once. There's kind of, I think we're getting better now, a duality of emotions, which before it was like, you're black or white, you're either this or. There was never and in the conversation. And I did have joy for a new pregnancy and a tiny, tiny bit of hope that it would work out. But I also had excruciating agony that what if I lost this baby too? I don't think I could survive that again. And so both coexist. Both are incredibly difficult to manage, but both need support. And so I just think that with pregnancy after loss, we have to get so much better at not putting your excitement onto the person who's pregnant and sitting with them where they are in that pregnancy and meeting them where they are, offering them support, acknowledging that this is a difficult experience and that it's okay to still grieve the loss of your baby whilst being pregnant with a new baby. Mm. Looking out for signs that they really are struggling. I wish someone had picked up how much I was struggling because I deserved to have clinical support at that level. I didn't deserve, I needed clinical support. I didn't need to end up with postpartum anxiety. And we see that time and time again. I needed clinical intervention at that point and medication and the difference that would have made. And I know that because then I did have another pregnancy many years later after yet another loss. And I did all of those things for myself because I knew the warning signs of where I was at. And I remember getting to about 18 weeks and knowing that the anxiety hadn't shifted, it hadn't lifted, and I just couldn't find my own way out of it. And peer support was great, but it wasn't enough. I needed another intervention. And so therefore I got counselling support and I went on medication. And the difference in that experience then was huge for me. I was in a better position, but it didn't remove the anxiety. I still, yeah. Right up until to Tahina's point in the documentary, I shared a post on LinkedIn last week around this. I was 38 weeks pregnant, had my C-section booked, and was meant to be having the baby. And I still say it when I think of a pregnancy because I didn't connect as a real baby. Mm. And I was caught COVID, which then meant the doctors wanted to put my C-section. It was just horrific. It was the worst luck in the world. We'd had 2 years of not catching it. It was in COVID, so it was still a big deal to catch COVID.
Yeah.
Thankfully, post vaccine, but there was nothing. The doctors was like, "You're fine. Go away. You only had miscarriages. It's not the same as a stillbirth," was what one lead doctor said to me at the hospital.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I was absolute mess. And I just needed someone to reassure me that it'd be okay and that my baby would be okay and I could hold out another 2 days. But I wasn't met with that. I was met with so much minimization because then that doctor compared my experience to later term loss and made me feel unworthy of speaking up. And that happens again and again and again. It's that medical kind of misogyny where you're minimized because you're a woman and you're speaking up. And there was just, horrific. And pregnancy after loss, we see so many journeys like mine, so many women with very similar experiences. It doesn't go away. The anxiety is incredibly hard to manage and they deserve so much support.
As a loved one and having your partner, your wife, your girlfriend go through that, what are the signs to look out for? Are there telltale signs or is it not very obvious?
It's not so much telltale signs, it's knowing your loved one, right, and knowing what the signs are for them, recognizing that they're having difficulty with this. And for me, I withdrew. Massively. I withdrew from so many friends. I had two friends that knew I was pregnant and that was it. Wow. And at that point I got to about 16 to 18 week mark and it was my husband was like, you're just not seeing anyone, you're hiding. And I was hiding the pregnancy, couldn't talk about it, there was nothing there. And so that's what he noticed. And then there was discussions around gentle discussions and slight persuasion because I could also fly off the handle and get quite angry because I was like, no, I'm fine. No, no, just don't want to talk about it. Block it off was my approach. So that was me, but everyone's different. So it's not so much that everyone's got the same signs. It's about knowing your loved one and watching out and just keeping that line of communication open, talking about it with them, making them know that you're the safe person to come to, that if they're not feeling okay, they can share and vent. Because sometimes that's actually all they need as well. They might not need clinical intervention, but they need a safe space to go to and say, hey, I'm really struggling with this. I'm not sure how I feel. Can you listen to me? Or they might want someone to go for a coffee and they might just spill everything out to you at that point. Yeah. But I'd say it's about keeping a close eye on those of us that know and not making an assumption that just because they're pregnant, that's it now. We can forget about all of those losses that they had. Babies come in, we're all good, excellent. There's kind of this minimization because as a loved one, it makes you uncomfortable to see them in so much pain. But there's something that's actually really special about empathy, right? And meeting them where they are and giving that safe space and saying, hey, I know how hard this is. And if you are the partner, you can acknowledge how hard it is for you too, because maybe you too are scared of this as well. Maybe you're also having thoughts around, what if this happens again? How am I going to pick her up again? How am I going to look after myself? Like, you too have probably got a lot of anxiety carried within you. So yeah, just the best thing I can say is talk, keep talking, keep listening, and watch out for your loved one. And if they're behaving differently, maybe consider that's because of this.
Absolutely. Going back to how you were addressed by the medical community when you had things arise, this is actually a really common thing we hear from our IQS community, not just with miscarriage, with menopause, endometriosis, polycystic ovaries. These women are going to their GPs and then feel like they're not being heard and they're struggling to advocate for their bodies. So in this instance, what would you like to tell the medical community of how they can be more empathetic and change their attitudes to how they address their patients?
I think, again, it comes back to those three key points: validation, empathy, and connection. Validation in terms of actually believing them and how they're feeling. I have complete ownership of my emotions. How I feel is real and valid to me. No one has permission to minimize that. No one has permission to disenfranchise my grief. To me, those losses were my babies. They will forever be my babies and part of my life. You cannot minimize that experience. And I wish I'd had those words at that point, but I didn't, because I was in such a fight or flight. I was an absolute mess. But health professionals need to understand that for many women who go through miscarriage, it induces an intense period of emotional distress, which, if left unsupported, can lead to clinical levels of anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and even suicidal thoughts. There's research from Tommy's in the UK that literally published in the medical journal, British Medical Journal, that highlight that link. So it isn't something that you can just minimize. You need to be very aware that your actions can actually add trauma to someone that's already in an incredibly difficult time. So don't minimize us is probably the biggest thing. Meet us where we are. We also know now, after years of working in this space, that medical professionals are time poor, but that's not an excuse. It takes 2 minutes to provide a compassionate, heartfelt sentence. And we will remember how you make us feel in that moment. I might not remember the exact words, but I will remember how you make me feel. And if you belittle me, I will remember that forever. And that's not okay. So we need you to meet us with that validation, empathy, and connection. You are busy. We get that. So provide referrals to support. I am so sick of people finding pink elephants via Google at 3 a.m. That is not okay. Every person who goes through this should be referred to a support organization. And then if they want support, they know where to get trusted, evidence-based support. It's just, so it's that validation, empathy, and connection. They're so key to all of this.
In my life, talking about miscarriage is such a taboo topic. So these points that you've made throughout our conversation, would you think that they help in turning around the taboo nature of miscarriage? And will this help our community change how we speak about it?
Absolutely. So validation, I bang on about it so much because that is where this stems from, right? There has been for years this disenfranchisement of the experience of early pregnancy loss. We have minimized them as not real babies yet, therefore not worthy of grief. We have medical professionals say, it's just a bunch of cells. Or it was an embryo. They won't language like baby.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself further disenfranchises and isolates that woman, who then doesn't access support, who then is at risk for mental health outcomes. So what we need to do is have conversations in wider society, because all of these health professionals are actual people who live within their own families and networks as well. We need to remove the social stigma and the taboo that happens around miscarriage and early pregnancy loss. We need to get very comfortable having hard conversations. We also have, if you think about miscarriage, it happens in this messy Venn diagram of taboos. It's blood, it's the death of a baby, it's women's health and her private, I've often, like, we hear that term quite a lot, which is ridiculous, but reproductive organs. It's everything that is hard for some people for so many generations, for so long. And we need to actually get better at saying, yes, you've lost a baby. I'm really sorry you're here. Here's support. We need to just have conversations that this can even happen. And they can't be conversations that we do here now, which is miscarriage is common. And it's like, yes, it's common. But to me, that was my baby that died. So yes, it is common. One in four pregnancies do end in loss. So therefore, I'd say that's an argument for every single person to know how to not add trauma and how to provide support for someone who goes through loss. Because if one in four pregnancies end in loss, then we need to make sure that everyone that goes through it is given the support that they need so they don't end up with poor mental health outcomes. And some of the most horrific, heartbreaking stories that I've heard from people who don't get the support that they deserve. So yes, it all spins back to validation. When we don't validate the experience, then what we do is we disenfranchise it and we tell that person they're not worthy of support, they're not worthy of anything. They isolate themselves in their grief and then they can end up in some really dark, dangerous places.
I want to talk about your Leave for Loss campaign because I think this is incredible. And I was wondering if you could share with our community a little bit about it.
This is something that I'm incredibly proud of. When we were probably about 2 years in, we had online communities at that point and women were sharing their experiences. And one theme I kept seeing was people post questions about, do I have to go back to work? I've just had a miscarriage, or I went back to work, I'm sat in the toilet crying, somebody help me. And because obviously our Facebook was live at the time and people literally commenting about this all of the time. And I was like, this doesn't feel right. Like, how come we've got women miscarrying, literally, so still bleeding, but presenting in boardrooms? Oh, or we've got women who go for a scan, are told that their baby has passed away and then return to work that afternoon and pretend everything's okay because they don't want anyone to know what they're going through. It's just awful. So I heard all of these stories and I was like, hey, this can't be right. So I remember very naively ringing up Fair Work Australia to find out what the legislation was for miscarriage. And because you've got legislation for so many other types of loss, right? And there was just a guy on the end of the phone. I don't think he knew who he'd got on the other end of the phone, but he was like to me, there is miscarriage leave. It's special maternity leave post 12 weeks. And I was like, 98% of losses occur prior to 12 weeks. How does that even fit in with miscarriage? Exactly. So I have a similar reaction to you. And then I think he got a bit frustrated with me because he could hear, obviously, the drive that I had. And he said, well, you can't change legislation. It is what it is. And I was like, watch me, furiously. And then from that, I just got more and more angry the more that I found out. And again, it speaks to disenfranchising early pregnancy loss. So at the time, there was leave coming through for later term losses, but there was for stillbirth, but there was nothing again for early. So it was just ridiculous. So we started a campaign at Pink Elephants. We started to raise awareness about this gap. We also then worked with pro bono partners who helped us build this really strong case for support. So we had financial modeling of what the cost would be. We interviewed small businesses. We went through large corporates. We got so much different support. It took a huge amount of time to build that. And then what we did with that is we took it to members of parliament and I literally went to Canberra so many times and met so many different MPs and got both bipartisan support for this to happen. It took 3 years. We had an incredible MP, Julian Simmons, from Queensland. He's no longer an MP, but he was the one that finally managed to open up the doors to the Attorney General of Australia at the time, which was Christian Porter. And then a few weeks later, it was actually Michaela Cash. And we managed to meet both of those and present our case as to why this needed to change. And we were actually met with, yes, this really does need to change. We believe we can see this. Thanks for bringing this up to us. They have concern. We did then have to go away, do the small business survey, find out what the implication would be for them, what the feelings was. So we still had a lot more work to do. And then it was tabled in Parliament in the June. It had to pass, obviously, several different houses, etc. There's this whole process it has to go through. And then on the 6th of September 2021, it passed. And forevermore now, a mother and her partner are entitled to 2 days paid bereavement / compassionate leave for their loss. Now, we do get people say, 2 days is not enough. And I understand that. I truly do. Mm-hmm. But this was about amending an existing piece of legislation. So, for example, if your sister dies, if your grandma dies, that's what you get, 2 days leave. Yep. It was putting baby loss in the same category as that. So it's about validation. But what's really, really beautiful is that now we get to work with all sorts of organisations and different workplaces like QBE, and they now offer 12 weeks paid leave. They've listened to the impact. They've seen the cost against the business if they don't support people in their time of need. And they've created this incredible inclusive policy. We work with other organisations like Westpac, a huge, obviously large bank who you think wouldn't offer the most, but they offer 5 days paid leave now for this.
That's
so
great.
We're continuing to take it past the legislative change now and make sure that workplaces firstly know how to support the people, but they have clear policies that offer so much more, which is more like what we actually deserve.
So do you offer a workplace program where you can not only help with leave, but help employers approach their employees to discuss these things?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that came from this work was we had all of this incredible evidence that we'd built for this case for support. And we were like, policy's amazing. Policy is a virtue signal to whoever that you actually, this matters. It is worthy of bereavement. That's amazing. But policy alone is not enough. It won't change. So we now have created a workplace program that's been running for the last 3 years that we have amazing clients on board with us. And with what we do through that program is we provide education and awareness and content bespoke to early pregnancy loss in the workplace. We train up individual peer support companions in workplaces to be the people to go to in your workplace. So kind of like a mental health first aider, but specific to pregnancy loss and fertility challenges. And I can't tell you, like, we did some training with Bupa last year and some of their staff, and I love being involved in these sessions because it's so heartwarming to see the change that we're genuinely making. And that now these organizations have these go-to people within them that provide support, and they're getting phone calls from people leaders every day saying to them, I've just had someone on my team go through a miscarriage. What do I say? What do I send them? What leave are they entitled to? And they manage that. They ensure that that people leader then gives the right support. That person going through the loss then is met with the validation, empathy, and connection that they deserve. They then assign them a return to work person so that when they come back to work, they've got someone who can help them through this, which is one of those peer support companions. It's just such a beautiful program that is smashing the stigma and taboo of pregnancy loss in workplaces, raising education and awareness into the true impact, and then also providing direct support to those who need it. And I couldn't be prouder. That's probably the proudest program I have at Pink Elephants because it's so outside of normal. No one thought to do that, but we did. We kept seeing how much people were hurting, trying to balance work with loss, and we knew we could make a difference. And yeah, I love that program.
That's truly amazing. You're incredible. I'm blown away. And the fact that these are big companies as well, and if the big companies are taking this lead and initiative, eventually it will filter into all businesses, large and small.
Exactly. So next year on the horizon for Pink Elephants is a small business version of this. We've just not had the capacity yet because we're still a young and small organisation ourselves. So we have strategically worked with the larger organisations first. But to your point, those larger organisations then send that message that this is an issue we need to address, that we can no longer ignore this. If one in four pregnancies end in loss, there are huge volumes of people in our workplace going through this issue that if we don't support, they will no longer work for us. And then you've got whole attrition. Like, there's just so much to it. And you've also got things like cost of presenteeism, where they are showing up to work, but are they actually being able to deliver on their job because they're in a crux? They need so much support and they're not getting it. So, yes, that program's, I get so excited to talk about it because I can genuinely, we get so many beautiful messages from women that we've helped in that program that you just, it's great.
Sam, thank you for joining us on the podcast today and sharing your incredible story. And for any of our listeners that want to learn a little bit more, I'll pop links in the show notes below.
Back to this podcast, please give us a 5-star review and share it with someone who you think would benefit from it. We want to help as many people as possible live healthier lives. This podcast is general in nature. We aren't doctors or health practitioners. But if this podcast has prompted something for you, we really encourage you to make an appointment with your health practitioner and get advice that is tailored to you. This podcast is recorded on the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.